Martina Navratilova started playing professional tennis in 1972, and when she retired in 1994, she had won a record 167 singles titles and 18 Grand Slams. But she didn't stay off the court for long. She's returned to tennis as a top 10 doubles player, although she's nearing 50. Now she's written a guide to staying fit. It's called Shape Yourself, My Six-Step Diet and Fitness Plan to Achieve the Best Shape of Your Life. It's published by Rodale, and I'm very pleased that it brings Martina Navratilova to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
So why write a fitness book and not a memoir? I know you wrote an autobiography in 1985, but you were 29 at the time, and an awful lot's happened since.
Well, lots happened, and I guess I could do that, but I felt this was more relevant. I've been getting asked that question so many times by the press as well as the fans, for the most part, the fans. How do you do it? How can you stay so fit? And especially women in their 30s and 40s and 50s, they go crazy when they see me. All these housewives, you know, they're dropping off their kids, and they see me, and it's like, Martina, you rock. How do you do it? So I started giving so many different answers because there is no one simple answer that I thought, you know what, I should just put it in a book. And now when these people ask the question, I can just say, read the book. But really, it wasn't a shortcut for me. It ended up being a labor of love because I really wanted to help a lot of people, get a little more out of their life and get some of that magic that it's not really magic. It's just a way of life.
Well, yours is certainly not the only fitness book out there, but why do you think that people are so unsuccessful when it comes to committing to a fitness regime, whose ever?
That's exactly
it is?
Just the word regime scares me.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, you come from Czechoslovakia, where the regime was something
exactly.
meant something
so
totally different.
So I know
different.
All about propaganda, and I know about regime, and I know what all that means, and that's why some of the things that go on in this country scare me, quite frankly. But that's another story.
But you're an athlete, and you had to have some kind of a fitness regime, or else you wouldn't have succeeded.
No, of course. But the point is that it's not. You don't have to be a great athlete, and you don't have to. It doesn't have to be that drastic. And that's the whole point of the book: is that you can make the little changes little by little, take little baby steps, rather than try to do it all at once. I think the problem that people have is they say, "Okay, you know, I'm going to start training three times a week for an hour," or "I'm going to just completely change my diet and do this." It doesn't work. They can stick with it for a week or two, but they just get tired of it because it's too much too soon. So my book, I think, really helps people do it little bit at a time, incrementally, so you don't feel deprived. You don't feel that you're sacrificing anything. Concentrating on all the things that you can do. And most of all, start paying attention to when you make a little change. Like, you know, cutting down how much coffee you drink, or cutting down how much beer you drink, or exercising just 15 minutes a day for a week, and see how much better you feel just doing that little thing. Then you will want to make more changes and say, okay, what's my next step? So it's step by step rather than an extreme makeover.
And you say a key to all of this is mindset.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to be mindful. You have to sort of pay attention, listen to your body.
And that's why you recommend keeping a journal?
Keeping a journal, I think, works for many reasons. But if nothing else, at the end of the day, when you write down what you need to do, for example, the next day, you can let go of all that stuff so you can get a good night's sleep. It's a very simple tip, but it works because, you know, how many times do you go to sleep and you start flipping all these things that you need to do, and I need to call that one, and I need to get this in the grocery store? If you write it down, you don't have to think about it anymore, and guess what? You're going to get a much better night's sleep, which, again, gives you better energy for the next day.
Do you think that you are well-suited for thinking this way because tennis has been your game, which is as much a mental game as it's a physical one?
Well, of course I'm well-suited for it. I'm a human being.
No, I mean, well, some of us, and I sit here all day.
Yeah.
If I could get as fat as, mm-hmm. you know, I can get really fat. But the reasons that I would try not to get too fat don't have anything to do with what the same sorts of things that you did.
Well, exactly. You want to stay healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to do other
I want to be
things.
Able to do this show for a long time.
You want to live a long life. That's the whole point, is not being a world-class athlete, but about getting more out of your life out of every day that you have, because let's face it, we have only one life that we know about for sure, and we might as well make the most of it. Whether you have 10 years left in your life or 40 years left, make the most of them. And you cannot do that if you keep giving your body food that it has no idea what it's eating, that it is difficult for the body to process, because the food's already processed. You know, you need to eat stuff that's... I like to eat what I know what it is. I like to see, okay, these are the beans, and this is the potato, and this is the, you know, whatever, tomatoes. If it's all mushed up together and it's all in one big glob and it says all these ingredients, but if I can't see them, I don't want to eat them.
Well, you're a vegetarian as well, and you talk about eating organic fruits and vegetables, but in this book, you don't seem to be promoting vegetarianism.
Well, first of all, I was a total vegetarian for 7 years, and I started eating fish, so I do eat fish, and I felt I needed to supplement my protein intake, especially being on the road so much, it's difficult, and my body just said, I got to have some meat, unfortunately, so I look forward to the time when I don't have to do it.
But yeah, it's not about... Another form of protein.
It's not... pardon me?
A different way of getting protein, because isn't protein more efficient when it comes from fish or chicken or even red meat?
You know, that's the thing is that everybody's chemical makeup is different, and it also changes during your lifetime. So just because a food is good for you right now, it doesn't mean it's still going to be good for you 5 years from now or even 5 days from now. So you have to sort of keep track of what's working and what's not. For a while there, I was drinking too much carrot juice, and my skin started turning orange because I had too much beta-carotene in my system. I was eating so many apples that I started getting an upset stomach from apples. So I stayed off them for a couple months, and then I regulated my body. Now I can eat them again.
Did people actually notice that you were turning orange?
Well, the doctor said something, yeah, because my palms were orange and the bottoms of my feet were orange, so I definitely didn't step in anything. And so I just stayed off of it for, you know, a few months, and then I could, anything in moderation, just like anything else, and it's all about balance anyway in the long run.
My guest is Martina Navratilova. Her book, Shape Yourself, My Six-Step Diet and Fitness Plan to Achieve the Best Shape of Your Life, published by Rodale. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. The reason I ask you about tennis being a mental game as much as a physical one is because it seems to me that largely what you're talking about is developing some kind of mental attitude. And that's something that you had to learn along the way. Early on in your career, there seemed to be times when you would fall apart in the middle of a match and were unable to regroup, and then that changed. So obviously something happened where you learned that self-discipline.
Well, what I realized is when I would get so emotional about just missing one shot or getting a bad call, and I'm like, that's not fair, and I would keep brooding about that one line call. Well, that's one point. And four games later, I'm still thinking about that one line call or one bad shot. So I realized that, obviously, that's pointless. But also, the only person I'm hurting is me. Because in the newspaper, people aren't going to know what happened. They just see the result. And so, you know, as an athlete, you have to really stay in the moment and take everything one point at a time. And it's a cliche, but it works. And so it is with any book. You know, it's one meal at a time, one day at a time. You can't lose 10 pounds overnight. It's going to happen over some weeks or months.
It's interesting. I always advise people in this business to forgive themselves. Everybody's going to say something
mm-hmm.
stupid
yeah.
or phrase something poorly. And you can brood about it, and then
right.
for the next half hour, you conduct the worst interview possible because you're always thinking about
right, exactly.
that thing you could have said. We've been talking about food. What did you eat when you were growing up in Czechoslovakia?
Well, it was more carbs, not too much protein because the meat was so expensive. So, you know, we'd have a chicken for the whole family for Sunday, and we'd still have leftover for the next day. So,
was that good or bad?
Well, it's fine. That's just what it was. We had a lot of vegetables and potatoes. Potato was the staple. And dumplings, maybe a little bit of beef, boiled beef or chicken. Fish, hardly ever. We didn't get much fish because it's a landlocked country. So I came to the States, and it was all protein and no carbs. And I put on 20 pounds in 2 weeks, eating basically hamburgers and steaks and pancakes for breakfast. And I couldn't put that much weight on if I tried. And I was playing tournaments, so my metabolism changed. But it was the diet, Czech diet is more carbs, not so much protein.
And less processed food.
Absolutely.
You talk about all of the additives that we have in our food. I'm sure that at least when you were growing up in, well, now it's the Czech Republic,
right,
that those things weren't happening. And I'm assuming now that the diet has changed because there's a kind of a globalization of all the things that you think we shouldn't do here.
Well, the processed foods obviously are not good for the system. And anytime I see ingredients and list of ingredients and it's something I don't know what it is, and where it came from, I don't want to eat it. Natural foods. If you can eat the foods in their most natural state, that's why whole grains are better than white, because it's not processed. It's how nature intended it for you to eat.
And yet Dr. Atkins argued that carbs are what are responsible for putting on weight.
Well, look what happened to him. He was a bit heavyset and got a heart attack anyway. So, you know, balance. It's all about balance. You cannot say all carbs or protein. There's good protein, there's bad protein. There's good carbs, there's bad carbs. So it's quality more than really what you're eating. But also you have to pay attention to what your body craves. Like for us athletes, before a match, it's carbs so that you're not weighted down and you have the longevity. After the match, it's protein to replace all the minerals and enzymes that you lost during the match and electrolytes. So, you know, it's about what you eat when, as well as how much, of course.
So you're looking for balance. And you have 28 days of meal plans. It doesn't seem like you exclude all that much in them. Because
no.
You don't want people to feel denied?
Absolutely. People tend to concentrate on so much on what they can't have. But there is such an abundance of fruits and vegetables out there and grains and great foods and meats and how you prepare it. Obviously, the simpler, the menu is very simple. It's easy to make, all less than half an hour of preparation. And you can substitute whatever you want. It's not set in stone. It's like, okay, you can either have milk or you can have soy milk or, you know, whatever vegetable you want. If you don't like sweet potatoes, then, you know, you do something else. I mean, it's just a guideline to get people, if they don't want to think about it, here is an example and, you know, go for it.
Many of the exercises in the book are Pilates-based. Have you always been a fan of Pilates?
You know, I did Pilates way back in the 80s in Aspen, but the guy told me, you're going to be really sore the next day. And I wasn't sore, so I didn't have time to experiment and really find out what it's all about. So I sort of didn't pay much attention. And then when I started playing tennis again in 2000, in the 90s, I had problems with my back. And I'd get so stiff, I kept getting chiropractic care, but it was just not holding. My back wasn't holding. And when I started playing again, I thought, I got to do something differently. And I knew Pilates was really good for the core and the posture. And your people with back problems would do Pilates, and the back problems would disappear. So I started doing that and never had a problem with my back since.
It's interesting how attitudes about exercise have changed over the years. There were times when basketball players were told they shouldn't lift weights because it would develop the wrong kind of muscles. Now they're encouraged to lift weights.
Of course.
I wonder about that. Pilates were verboten for a while, and now you think that do you think it would have actually helped your – well, it couldn't have helped your career. You had
– It would have helped. All of that helped. The training
has changed.
How many
more
so
Grand
much.
Slams could you have
I
won?
I have no idea, but probably a few more. It would have helped everybody because it helps with the core and the stability and balance. And tennis, for example, is a very close sport. Your back is always scrunched up and you're making these short strokes. Everything is sort of closed up. Pilates or yoga or any exercises encourage opening up and, again, opening up the organs as well as the muscles, lengthening, because most exercises shorten everything, so this lengthens it back up.
So any exercise, running, riding a bike, playing tennis, people play tennis for fitness.
I think variety is really what's the key. The body gets used to anything if you do it every single day. If you run every day, body gets used to it, you know, getting so much benefit as if you run three times a day and then you do maybe biking twice a week, three times a week rather, biking twice a week and maybe weights twice a week together. It's about balance and mixing it all up. I don't do any one thing at any one time. I don't even do the same workout in the weight room when I do weights.
Because people get bored when they do the
same
thing.
You get bored, the body gets bored. The body gets used to it. You need to keep it on its toes. And it's more fun. I like variety. I like doing different things.
You also devote an entire chapter to avoiding fatigue. Why are so many people run down?
Well, how many times do you ask a friend, how are you doing? Oh, I'm tired. And why? you know, if that's your state every day, then there's something wrong with your life. And so you need to take stock of your life and say, okay, do I want to live like this the rest of my life? Or do I really need to just kick ass for a year, make as much money as I can, and then relax? Or am I going to keep doing this forever? And so I've sort of, this book asks people to sort of take a look at their life and see where they can make the little changes so that they're not tired. And one of the chapters is entitled, Are You Tired of Being Tired?
Well, if you're
you should be.
are you ever tired? Do you ever take a day off?
Of course. Every week I take a day off. You have to let your
body. Even God rested one day.
Even God rested,
and
apparently.
So should Martina.
You need to take the time to energize the body, let it relax, and get ready for the next week ahead. It's very important to recharge the batteries.
You also share your tips on conquering jet lag. What do you suggest?
First of all, don't panic when you're not sleeping when you should be. I think people do that a lot, especially when it's a bigger time change, like if you fly to Europe or to the Far East or something, and it's like 6, 7, 8 hours time difference. For me, drink a lot of water when you're on the plane, you get dehydrated. Eat as lightly as possible. And when you get somewhere and you are really, really sleepy, then sleep just a couple hours. Don't sleep 6 hours. Sleep 2 hours. Get the nap during the day. And then I set my clock as soon as I get on the plane. I set my clock to where I'm going to be. So I already get into the mindset of being on that time. And if you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can't sleep. I just turn on the light and I read for a while until I get sleepy again. Then I turn off the light and hopefully it works. If it doesn't, then I do it again. But tossing and turning, thinking, I can't sleep. That's the worst thing you can do. At least do something productive.
My guest is Martina Navratilova, who has won a record 9 Wimbledon singles titles, 58 Grand Slam titles. I think most of us agree that she's the best female tennis player of the modern era, perhaps the greatest in the history of the game. And now she has shared her fitness tips, Shape Yourself, the 6-step diet and fitness plan to achieve the best shape of your life. It is published by Rodale. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Martina Navratilova. She's written a book called Shape Yourself, My 6-Step Diet and Fitness Plan to Achieve the Best Shape of Your Life. It's published by Rodale. Did you start playing tennis because you wanted to stay fit? How old were you at the time?
I was 5.
No, but so obviously it was just something that appealed to you, or a parent pushed you into?
No, I wasn't pushed. My family did play tennis, so I just went with them to the courts and just sort of hit against the wall for a couple of years by myself because I like to do that. I like any sport with a ball in it, I'm there. It just so happened that my family played tennis. I think if they were basketball players, I would have been a basketball player.
So now you play basketball.
Yeah.
You play ice hockey.
Yeah.
You ski.
Yeah.
This is all, as far as you're concerned, another way of doing exercise, or are these just things that you would like to do?
Well, I love to do them, and it's a great way to get exercise. Water skiing is a fantastic sport as well. You get to do all the weights and the cardiovascular all at the same time. I prefer doing the sports themselves than training in the gym, but if that's the only thing you can do is get in the gym, then get in the gym. And if you can't, then you do it at home. There are so many great little exercise tools that you can do at home. The gym's always open. You don't have to make an appointment. And if you don't have the time to spend, there's no excuse really to not do it right.
But you are a self-motivator to the point where in the 70s for a while you didn't even have a coach, so you were able to figure out how to play on that high level without some external guidance.
Well, back then, most people really didn't have coaches, or they'd have coaches at home, but coaches didn't travel with the players. I think the probably was economics talking, because you couldn't afford to have a coach with you. But now, with the prize money, what it is, you can get that help. Self-motivating. That's why it's important, I think, who you surround yourself with and who your friends are. Again, when you try to do a healthy thing, it's so funny, maybe you don't want to drink that night and your friends are drinking. Oh, come on, just have a little bit. And you said, no, I'm on this diet. Well, come on, drink. Well, don't go out with those people. You know, the support that the team that you surround yourself with is very, very important. And even tennis being an individual sport, you still depend on many people to do the right thing. And so it is with life. So hang out with the people that support you and who you are and who you want to be and are positive influences in your life.
Well, you have kept a friendship going with Chris Evert, mm-hmm. despite the fact that you played against each other 80 times, which I think is a record in individual sports.
Oh, yeah, that'll never be broken.
But still, it's just amazing. These were life and death matches, most of them, and yet you were friends. Are you able to separate one from the other?
Of course. It's a sport. I mean, tennis is a game, and we were so fortunate that we could do that for such a long time and make money at it. We didn't have to get a real job. I think that's what I appreciated about the rivalry the most, is that we just played ball. You know, there were no games, really, no gamesmanship. Now these days you see players, you know, taking a bathroom break or, you know, doing all kinds of funny things on the court or calling the trainer, even though there's obviously nothing wrong with them. They try to break up the rhythm of the opponent or whatever. We just played. And if I ever had to go to the bathroom, it's because I had to go to the bathroom.
But there,
nowadays you wonder, you know, is she taking a bathroom break or is she trying to break up the opponent's concentration?
There aren't the kinds of rivalries we saw in those days, either men's or women's tennis.
Well, right now it's Federer and everybody else, and on the men's side, and they're all playing for second place. And on the women's side, there's not been a real clear-cut number one. We've had several number ones this past 12 months with Kim Clijsters and Lindsay Davenport, Emily Maurismo, Maria Sharapova, and Justine Enan Arden is closing in, and Venus and Serena are nowhere to be found. But they're still a great story. So we have great names out there. Svetlana Kuznetsova, she just won the tournament last week at the NASDAQ. So we have a lot of great players out there that are capable of winning at any given time. But that makes it worse for having a rivalry because there are so many of them.
The last five Grand Slams have been won by five different women.
Amazing. That shows you the depth of women's tennis. And you know, what's funny is in my day when it was just Chris and myself, it's just the two of them. It's so boring. But look at the men. They have so many different champions. And now on the men's side, it's Federer and anybody else. And the women have the variety, but they're still saying the men are more interesting. I'm like, okay, what do we have to do? Stand on our heads here.
Well, you to some degree changed the women's game, didn't you? Because it had always been seen as a more of a control game, a less power game. And you, as much as anybody, inspired women to think about playing a more powerful tennis.
Well, I played a serve and volley game. That hasn't really caught on. And also now it's more difficult to play that kind of a game because of the rackets, etc. But I think, bring more power to the game and the training and just the physical fitness that obviously if you're more fit, you will hit the same ball with less effort, which means more control, so you'll get better results. So it all translates. The power definitely translates in tennis. And now the women are just, they're so big, you know. I'm 5'8", 145 pounds. Well, it was. Now I'm about 150. And these women are 160, 165 pounds, you know, 6 foot. And they are, you know, they have so much more leverage to hit the ball with. And they've been hitting it hard since they were little, so they know how to do it.
Do you think that you would have been as successful if you hadn't defected from Czechoslovakia?
Definitely not as. Who knows?
Even though they put so much emphasis on winning and on developing top-level athletes?
No, well, they don't. In Czechoslovakia back then, it was really different. I mean, tennis was not as organized as it became later in the 80s and 90s. And we were not the machine that the East Germans and the Russians really had producing athletes, and they were more concentrating on Olympic sports. Tennis was seen still as a sport for the elite upper echelon of society, and actually the communists really frowned upon it, so it wasn't that supported. But anyway, I got great help. The program was okay, but there was never that much emphasis on winning. It was about just doing your best, and that's what my father always said, just do your best.
Well, do you feel a certain nationalistic pride when Jaromir Jagr breaks all of the records in hockey?
Absolutely. Most of all, I just like to watch him play because he's a phenomenal hockey player. And it's great that he's sort of got his groove back this year with the Rangers, so it's good to see. But, I'm always rooting for the Czechs, of course.
And is everything forgiven now?
As far as what?
Well, after you defected, I'm sure people back home were rather upset with you.
No, the people weren't upset. They were upset with the regime that they actually pushed me into leaving. And if anything, they were like happy that I stuck it to the communists. No, it's the communist party that really ruined the country. And it goes back to the Soviets. So, you know, whenever people want me to speak Russian, I'm like, you know what? I'd rather not. Nothing personal, but you guys really messed up our country. So those are some deep scars. Whenever people go into politics and they try to say that communism was a good thing, I said, oh, go ahead and live in a communist country then if you think it's so great.
My guest is Martina Navratilova. She's written a new book called Shape Yourself, My Six-Step Diet and Fitness Plan to Achieve the Best Shape of Your Life. It's published by Rodale. And I got the sense earlier that you feel that without this kind of approach to fitness, you wouldn't be back on the tennis courts. But it is astounding that you're doing as well as you are. I mean, I can hardly think of anybody in her late 40s or his late 40s. I think there's one guy in the major leagues with the Mets, Julio Franco, who is around your age, who has continued to play at that level. But could you have done it any other way?
Well, I don't know. I never thought I would be playing this late, but then I guess nobody ever has.
Well, what brought you back?
You'd played doubles
before. Is your game different now than it was when you were also competing in the singles?
Well, of course it's different. The technique has evolved quite a bit and mine has changed quite a bit. I know I can't play as well as I used to, but some things I do better than I used to. But it's about playing with passion. It's about playing with pride and it's about doing your best. And I love the game. It's a fun sport. It's a great sport. And if I can give people pleasure by hitting a tennis ball, why not?
Well, when you retired in 1994, was it because you felt that you were losing the edge?
No, I just had enough, you know, and that's why I think I don't play singles. I know I can't be in top 10, but I think I could do well playing singles. I would still beat a few of the players out there, but I would have no life. Singles, really, you have to give a total commitment, and I would have no outside life, and, I'm not willing to do that at this time in my life, but that's it.
Well, your current doubles player, Anna-Lena Grunwald, is almost 30 years younger. No, that she's not anymore?
She's not. No. We played together just last summer. I'm playing with Liesl Huber, who's got a great story to tell.
She is much younger than
she
you?
Is, well, she's 29, so they're all much younger. You know, they're all half my age or less, but that's been the story for a while now.
That has to be weird, isn't it?
No, I don't think about it, and I think they're over it too. They're just they're just playing me as a player. They don't look at the age. They don't look at anything else. If anything, they think, oh, this is a great opportunity to beat one of the greatest players of all time. But at the same time, they don't want to lose to an old lady. So, which I'm certainly pushing that.
Well, you no longer have. Well, I think that most players complain about life on the tour, being on the road constantly. Have you been able to work it out so that you can affect some kind of balance there as well?
Yeah, I bought an RV so I can stay in an RV when I'm on the road. No, actually, we got the RV so we could transport our animals, dogs, from Florida to Colorado when I go there in the winter. But I bring my own pillow. I've traveled with my own pillow now for probably about 25 years, and that makes a difference. At least you put your head down the same way. I figured I've spent more than half my life in hotel rooms over the years, so that makes it nicer. And I would rather be at home, but, you know, I can't play tennis matches at home. I can't make a difference to anybody's life at home.
Are you able to do all the things you want to do when you're on the road, do all the exercises?
Well, I can do the exercises because once you're on the road playing tennis, you just really, it's about maintenance. The working out comes before I go on the road, so I do that at home. I go to the local Y, in Sarasota, and then I do, you know, the other training around there, swim in the golf, ride the bike, do some rollerblading, play some basketball, whatever it takes. I have the luxury of taking the time to take care of my body. I realize that, and that's what's different for most people. They have a regular job, and then they try to fit in the fitness. And again, the book goes back to some good, useful tips of how to get that workout in and make it fit in your lifestyle.
Because you either have to do it early in the morning or after work, and either way, it can cause a lot of disruption.
Again, frequency is more important than how long you do it. You're better off doing 15 minutes every day than doing 2 hours on the weekend. And my recommendation, and what I found, that I much prefer to do it in the morning, because that sets you off, gets your body going, gets the blood flowing, so you think clearer. So it actually helps you be more productive behind the desk as well. And also you're less likely to slough it off. You know, when you haven't done your workout, you say, oh, I'm going to do it at 6 when I get home, and then something happens, oh, I'll do it at 7. And
I'm tired.
Sure enough, oh, I'm too tired, I'm going to go to bed. And that can get repetitive, that can keep happening. So you're better off doing it in the morning. Another tip is to try to set up workout time with a friend, because that you're less likely to bail out when you're doing it with a friend. And also it makes it much more enjoyable, I think.
Now, you'll be turning 50 next October. Are you really considering playing in the singles draw at Wimbledon this year?
I don't know where that got. I said I might play some singles on the grass, and out of that came Wimbledon. I don't think I would play at Wimbledon. If I play on the grass, it would be the two tournaments leading up to it.
But grass is your favorite.
Grass is my favorite surface. It suits my game the best. And nowadays, the hard courts are so slow, and the rackets just really have taken the ground strokes to a new level. They really help the ground strokes a lot more than they help the volley. So you come to the net and you hit a great shot. And in the old days, you would have a sitter volley. Now, the women or the men, they can dip it, get the ball at your feet. You have to volley up, and then you're a sitting duck. So you have to be an unbelievable volleyer to be successful. And as good a volleyer as I am, it's almost impossible to come in on a regular level. So on the grass, you can still get away with it because the bounce is lower and the players don't have as much time to set up, so you have a better chance. But in any case, I did not say I would be playing at Wimbledon. If I play on the grass, I think I'll just play the tournaments before at Birmingham and Eastbourne. Playing all three events on the grass, it's too much, and that's not what I'm there for. I'm there to do well in the doubles and mixed doubles.
And also to have fun.
Most of all, to have fun. That's the whole point of it. Actually, what I say to people is, you know why I really keep playing tennis? So I can eat what I want. because when I exercise that much, you know, on the court for 2-3 hours a day, I can eat quantity, and I love to eat, and that's, I think the book will reflect that too. It's not about depriving yourself of flavors and textures and tastes. It's about doing them the right way. So,
Martina will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 6:30 at the New School's Tishman Auditorium. For tickets, call 888-NYT-1870. Tomorrow you can find her at 1 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store on 5th Avenue and 44th Street. Her book, Shape Yourself, My Six-Step Diet and Fitness Plan to Achieve the Best Shape of Your Life, is published by Rodale. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.